It's not every day that we hear the bearers of glad tidings here on Mooney Goes Wild with regard to the natural world, but today, for a change, we bring you good news about the humpback whale. Due to the decimating effect of the whaling industry throughout the 20th century and other factors, by the 1950s, the population of Western South Atlantic humpbacks was down to only around 450 individuals. But according to a new study published in the Royal Society Open Science Journal, those numbers have rebounded and grown to almost 25,000. Richard Collins spoke to Alex Urbini, the study's lead author.
The goal of our research was to estimate the recovery of the Western South Atlantic humpback whale. And to do that, we integrated information on the current population size, how fast this population it was growing, how many whales were killed by whaling, and how many whales were killed but not landed. So we tried to estimate the proportion of animals that were struck by whalers, but they were never brought into shore for processing. And because they were not brought into processing, they were not counted as deaths in the whaling statistics. And what we found out is that the Western South Atlantic humpback whale population has recovered to almost 95% of the numbers that they once had before they were killed by whaling. So we estimated the population today to be at about 25,000 whales, and the pre-exploitation abundance was estimated to be at about 27,000 whales. So it's pretty close to being fully recovered.
Alex, you have done, I think, pretty unique research on the pre-whaling population of this animal. Now, if we go back in time a couple of centuries, I have the impression, whether it's kind of guilt or something, that all the worst whalers came from the Northern Hemisphere and that people in the Southern Hemisphere didn't do any whaling sort of thing. So the exploitation of whales would have really began with the harpoon and the steam-driven ship. We could go to the South Seas even in winter in reasonable comfort and exploit whales. Is this model correct? Go back a few centuries and tell us what went on.
So a few centuries ago, whaling was done using what we call the pre-modern whaling methods, where we used rudimentary killing methods. So the harpoons were, you know, handheld. You would throw them at whales. You had to throw many harpoons to kill a whale. You would chase whales from sailboats or from rowed-powered boats. And it wasn't a very effective way of hunting, but that was the only technology available at the time. Well, at the end of the 1800s and the end of the 19th century, the Norwegians invented what we call the explosive harpoon or grenade harpoon, which is a much more effective way of killing the whales. And that added to like steaming boats and more powerful boats and faster, allowed us to explore more other species of whales and to hunt them in hospital environments such as the Southern Oceans.
Well, now your population was exploited and went right down in the 1950s. When did protection become law?
So protection for humpbacks was proposed by the International Whaling Commission in the mid-60s, but the Soviets illegally killed humpback whales until the early 1970s. And then, you know, it really became law, or it became more effective in the mid-1980s when a global whaling moratorium was implemented by the International Whaling Commission.
Well, now, it seems to me remarkable that it could get, from the 1980s to today, that it could get back up to 25,000, given that a whale doesn't breed until it's five, and then it's going to take another 5 years for the baby to reach a breeding age in its turn. So in 10 years, it's only got a pair has only produced one youngster. Now, you have a minimal population with that terribly low reproductive rate. The sums don't seem to add up. How do you get up to the astronomical 25,000 in a decade or two?
Actually, for this population, the Western South Atlantic, they started to recover before the mid-1980s. The last humpback whale taken was in 1972 from this population. So that's when they started to grow back without any kind of hunting going on. And they do breed faster than most other whale species. So you're right that they become sexually mature at about age 5. But females will have babies typically every 2 years, every 2.5 years. But in some cases, there are females that can have babies every year. So it is a relatively higher reproductive rate than other whale species. For example, like right whales. Right whales don't breed as fast. And because of that reproductive power, humpback whales can reach growth rates of about 10% per year, which will lead to a faster recovery.
So compound interest of 10% a year on the original population in the 1970s will give you 25,000 now, will it?
Correct. If you think about 500 to 700 whales in the 1970s to today, a growth rate of about 10% per year will give you about 25,000 today. Animals have to find themselves to breed, and that could take time, or in some cases, it might not happen at all.
So in other words, the singing and calling that the male does at the breeding areas is crucial to his getting a mate or securing mates. And if things get very thin on the ground, there's nobody listening and nobody can hear him. Is this the model?
Correct.
Is it true necessarily that that singing is about getting mates? I believe that no one has ever recorded a female approaching a male as a result of singing. And is it true that humpback whales are not territorial, so they're not staking out territories, and they may not even be securing females by singing? So what else is the singing about?
Well, the singing could be a form of communication. I mean, it is a form of communication. And as such, it may have multiple roles. One of them is attracting females. Only the males sing. The females don't sing. So the males could be actually singing to let other males know that they are there and, you know, maybe they don't want any kind of competition. But it could have other roles in terms of communication.
Why are they tribal? After all, if you want a partner, it doesn't matter to you that she comes from the tribe next door. In fact, it's an advantage in some ways because reproductively she'll be more interesting and more introduced your genes into your population. So why, it seems, they exclude the wrong dialect whales from their area? Is that true? And why would they do that?
I think that they don't necessarily exclude their own dialect. It's just that different populations will have different dialects in the breeding grounds. But because there is this separation of the breeding populations, typically the females from one region will mate with the males on that region, and the females from another region will mate with the males from another region. I mentioned before that there is this cases where one whale from one breeding population might go to another population. This doesn't happen very often. When it does, I don't think we really know what the fate of that animal is in terms of reproduction. In other words, we don't know if it's a male moving from one population to the other, then whether it's going to become reproductively active in that population. One possibility is that if a male comes to an area and sings a different song, he might be more attractive to females than all the other males that are singing more or less the same song.
Now, these are among the great whales, highly cooperative animals. Now, the two that whales seem to hunt together and form coalitions and so forth for hunting purposes. But the humpback is, I think, probably unique. It's its own genus and everything else. It's on its own. And it has this social dimension. Is that a factor, or do you think that's a factor in its great performance, in the fact that it has outstripped the other baleen whales in recovery?
Yeah, it is very possible that because these animals have a more socially developed society, is not the right word for this, but it is possible that plays a role into their greater breeding success. And they're still hypothetical in some sense, but it is possible that large aggregations of humpback whales that are singing will attract animals from other regions to go and breed in that area.
It seems to me that the humpback is one of those iconic animals that is a blessing to conservationists because it is by far the most popular whale. It's the one that behaves so spectacularly with its great breaching and singing and flaunting its tail, which has got unique markings, enable it individuals to be tracked. It doesn't need to be ringed or tagged, as you would say. We owe it a great deal, it seems to me, in this world, because the public knows it. And if ever television wants to show a whale, it will surely be the humpback. It is a great animal, and I think we owe it a lot. What do you feel?
Oh, I feel that you're absolutely right. I think it is an iconic species. And because it presents this, we call aerial behavior, it, you know, it breaches, it comes out of the water, and it slaps tails, it slaps flippers. It's interesting to see, it's beautiful to see. The other thing is that humpbacks tend to congregate close to shore. Other species don't do that as much. So it's much easier for humans to have contact with these animals because they're so close to a beach or, you know, or within reach of a boat. So you're absolutely right.
Does it like us? All these whale-watching expeditions that go up very close to whales such as humpbacks, does it upset it to have boats come and look at it? Or is it rather like some bottlenose dolphins that seem to cleave human contact and like the attention?
I don't know if we know that these whales like the attention. Some whales will approach boats, especially the younger ones. They're more curious. But I don't necessarily think that they like our presence or like the contact with us. It's more like they are interested in what's around them and they can get close to people, close to boats. But it also depends a lot on what they're doing. So if they are, for example, focused on feeding, they will not necessarily pay attention to us, but they are also not necessarily going to be bothered if we approach them. If they're resting at the surface, then their behavior is going to be different. And then the way that they interact with a boat might be different.
Have you any prescription before we finish up as to how we should behave or not behave in the interests of these whales?
I think the more we can do to minimize any kind of impact to whale populations, the faster we're going to see them recover and thrive. I think our paper, for example, showed that the moratorium whaling, the protection of humpback whales, led to the recovery of the West and South Atlantic humpbacks. There are many other populations that are showing similar trends, that they are recovering. And so this is the important aspect. We can take actions to minimize risks to whales and ensure that they recover or that the current populations are not going to go extinct.
Well, congratulations on your excellent research so far, and we wish you well for more research in the future. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you very much.